Good morning. I am Melissa Millis, white-bodied, she, her pronouns, and I've got black jeans on and my pumpkin alpaca sweater. You probably will get tired of seeing that. I wear it, I think, every weekend. That's okay. I don't care. And I'm 42 years old, I think. I kind of lose track. I always look at John and be like, how old am I? I don't remember, really, and that's okay. But as I've aged and matured, hopefully, right, I feel like I've gotten a lot better at asking powerful questions in the face of oppressors, of those looking to trap me or to use my words against me. Maybe you have had similar experiences. Even from a young age, I think I had a knack for navigating such traps and exposing injustice, kind of turning things upside down so that they could be seen a little more clearly. But it wasn't until I stepped into strongly oppressive systems in Haiti through my work with New Hope that I really began to gain some confidence in this area. And that confidence bloomed as I linked up with others and worked with therapists and gained companions along the way, as, of course, I also grew in experiencing what it means to be a parent. For better or worse, we learn from our experiences, right? Powerful questions and navigating traps is all about improvisation and a necessary part of walking the good road. Today, we're going to actually fast forward from the middle of Mark, chapter 10, where we were last week, to chapters 11 and 12. And between last week's text and this week's text, Jesus has predicted his own death for a third time. James and John request places of glory at Jesus' right and left, to which I think, good grief, you guys. We have the story of the healing of Bartimaeus. We have Jesus entering Jerusalem, which we'll actually come back to on Palm Sunday because that's what we traditionally do. So we're just going to skip past that right now. But we should be aware that he has already entered Jerusalem, okay? And in Jerusalem, he has cursed the fig tree and he has cleared or cleansed the temple, making space for everyone. To which I think, too, at this point, with the story of the four mountains in mind that we read a couple of weeks ago, we might say that he has begun a descent, if you will, in his journey. I'm going to be reading from the First Nations version this morning. Again, if you don't have a copy for your household, I encourage you to grab one over there and take it with you. Or if you just want to borrow one for the morning and follow along, you're welcome to do that as well, if you didn't bring yours. As I often do, I'm going to make a few observations before we engage in some small group and large group reflection today. But before I read, I just want to point out that this story starts with Jesus' authority being questioned, to which I think, of course, right? Of course his authority is being questioned. He has just cleared the temple, okay? He has just given access to those who didn't have it, while simultaneously turning upside down the money-making schemes that made access to the temple and therefore to God's self transactional, right? He was messing with unjust systems. So, of course, his authority is questioned. And that's where we pick up. Chapter 11, verse 27. Creator sets free, who is Jesus, returned to the village of peace, Jerusalem, and was walking about in the sacred lodge or the temple, maybe as a form of prayer, but definitely to be in this sacred space associated with connecting with God's self. The head holy men and the scroll keepers came to him, along with some of the tribal elders. By what right do you do these things? They challenged. Who gave you this right? While I'm sure the list of these things, right, quote, these things is quite long at this point, we, of course, are reminded that he most recently cleared the temple. So they're asking probably about that, but also the long list, right, that they have against him. By what right do you do these things? They challenged him. Who gave you this right? I will give you one question to answer. If you answer me, then I will answer you. The purification ceremony performed by Gift of Goodwill, who is John, was it from the spirit world above, or did it come from human beings? The spiritual leaders looked at each other. They could not decide on how to answer him. Creator Sets Free stood before them and held his ground. Answer me, he challenged back. So they put their heads together and talked it over. We cannot say from the spirit world above, for then he will say, why did you not listen to him? But neither can we say from human beings, for the people honor Gift of Goodwill as a prophet. They feared the people, so they said, we do not know. So then I will not answer your question, he said to them, and tell you by what right I do these things. Now, the parable of the tenants or the vineyard comes in between our text for today, and it is a story that is ultimately about the spiritual leaders being dishonorable. And again, these leaders wanted to go after Jesus right there, but they didn't because they were afraid of the people, and so they set a trap. Chapter 12, verse 13. The spiritual leaders sent some of the separated ones, the Pharisees, and the friends of Looks Brave, the Herodians, to trap Creator Sets Free in his word. Those friends of Looks Brave, remember those ancient monarchs, right, that we saw a few weeks ago with the beheading of John the Baptist? These monarchs set themselves above the law, taking whatever they wanted. Wisdom Keeper, they came and said to him, we know you always speak the truth about the Great Spirit and represent him well, no matter what others may think or say. Tell us what is right, they asked. Does our tribal law permit our people to pay taxes to the government of the people of iron, the Romans? Yes or no? As Joel and I were talking last week, this would be the point where we might point out again, like, oh, they're figuring out what game they're playing, right? Creator Sets Free, Jesus could see right through their false faces. Why are you putting me to the test? He said to them. Bring to me one of their silver coins, or a denarius, and I will look at it. So they brought one to him. He took a good long look at it, holding it up to the sky to see it clearly. Then he turned the face of the coin for them to see. Whose image and words are carved into this coin? He asked. The ruler of the people of iron, Caesar, they replied. Then give this ruler the things that are his, he told them. But give to the Great Spirit the things that belong to the Great Spirit. The spiritual leaders were amazed at his words. They could not believe it. They had failed right in front of all the people and could not use his words against him. So they walked away in silence. This is the word of the Lord. In these two stories, we see Jesus leading or eldering us, right? He exhibits this improvisation, which requires tapping into the wisdom and the tools that are carried both with and within us. Improvisation puts him in a posture where failure is possible, right? Courage guides, and we open up to learning or adapting. We open up to becoming. In the first story, Jesus' power is challenged and he employs powerful questions to navigate the terrain and what's next on his journey ahead. Jesus put those who oppose the good news between a rock and a hard place, as my grandfather would say. This is a place where they had to grapple, they had to face their beliefs, their true motivations, their allegiance to God, and their own practicing of the ways of God against their fear of the people. And in this place, their power is put in check. Remember, there is power in the people bearing witness, a power with, not a power over, as Ryan here reminded us a few weeks ago. And the Pharisees are definitely afraid of the people. In the face of those who claimed power spiritually or through a death-dealing human monarchy, right, Jesus exhibits the life-giving majesty of God incarnate in him as Christ enfleshed. That is power. God with us. And Jesus exhibits all of this through a posture of curiosity and wonder, claiming his own power or authority. While many of us have been raised to fear power, Prentice Hemphill in What It Takes to Heal, I remember it. Block. There was a block this morning. Prentice reminds us, Martin Luther King Jr. once defined power as the relative ability to achieve purpose, saying, "To me, the root of any power is in the body, specifically in our ability to be embodied in a way that organizes ourselves and ourself to act out a vision. But power is not only an individual's expression. It is first felt in the alignment of our own bodies, then multiplied and amplified in our syncopation, in our coordination with one another. We cultivate power in ourselves, and we build power when we work together." Prentice's words resonate with me, too, because I have had a similar experience as I have engaged in the work of New Hope, as we love, we learn, and we work together. Jesus knew this, too. He embodied it in syncopation with the Great Spirit and those who walked with him. And this syncopation gave Jesus great foresight, hindsight, and insight, something gifted along the Four Mountains journey. So he was ready for the trap. He could perceive it, right? And he calls out their intent. And once again, he navigates the trap by asking more questions. I think we can all see the pattern, right? Questions become a powerful tool along the good road. Not taking things at face value and asking questions with curiosity and wonder often uncovers truth or motives or the root of what we're facing. Without knowing what we're really facing, it is hard and maybe even impossible to engage individually and collectively in the healing processes. Today, as our democracy seems to be crumbling and people's lives are at stake, we face oppression and join in solidarity with those who are in the direct line of harm. Christ in and among us invites us to walk the good road in syncopation with God and one another, that we might be a people who engage in healing work, transforming ourselves, changing the world, one step at a time. May we remember Jesus' invitation into the days ahead.